It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from here in Kodiak, Alaska, up here on Signal Hill, where it is 41 degrees. And they're calling for more rain today. Could be heavy at times. Northeast winds to 10. Rain tonight, too. Low around 38 tonight. Southeast winds to 10. And for tomorrow, more rain at least until noon. Then showers between noon and 3. And then just a chance of rain after 3 p.m. And we're looking for scattered rain showers Thursday night. Some showers and a chance of rain on Friday. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Outdoor Film Festival is coming to a drive-in near you. The state of Alaska plans to divest itself of its Russian investments as soon as it can. Hospitals in Alaska are looking toward normal conditions, hopefully. And what does the ban on Russian oil exports mean to Alaska? Those stories and more after this.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Vice President Kamala Harris and her team have touched down in Poland at a diplomatically delicate moment for NATO. Ukraine wants MiG fighter jets to defend the country against Russia's invasion. Question is, who gets the jets to Ukraine without risking a bigger war that threatens to engulf the Western military alliance, such as Poland? The U.S. advised Poland, a NATO country, to send Soviet-made fighter jets that Ukrainian pilots are trained to fly to Ukraine. And Poland caught Washington off guard by countering that all 28 of its planes be handed over to NATO by getting them to a U.S. base in Germany. Today, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki addressed the issue.
How do you get planes into Ukraine in a way that is not escalatory? And what are the logistics and operational details of that? Those are conversations are happening between counterparts at the military level, and I would expect any update might come from them.
Well, moments ago, Pentagon spokesman John Kirby reportedly said that the U.S. does not support the transfer of additional combat aircraft at this time. NPR's Greg Myrie reports a senior U.S. defense official says Russian forces have made moderate progress toward two Ukrainian cities in the past day, but are also encountering stiff resistance.
The U.S. official says Russian troops have advanced closer to the northeastern city of Kharkiv, the scene of intense battles throughout the past 2 weeks of fighting. The Russians are also getting closer to the southern city of Mykolaiv. But the official stressed the Ukrainian fighters are still putting up strong resistance in those areas, and Russia has not made significant progress toward the capital, Kyiv, or other heavily contested cities. Russia continues to suffer setbacks. The U.S. estimates the Russians have lost several hundred military vehicles since launching the invasion on February 24th. Greg Myrie, NPR News, Washington.
The Biden administration is restoring California's authority and that of 13 other states to impose tougher standards on car emissions. NPR's Lauren Sommer reports the move reverses a Trump-era policy to roll back fuel economy standards.
For decades, California has had stricter rules on emissions from car tailpipes, since the state has some of the worst air quality in the country. To do that, California needs special permission from the Environmental Protection Agency. The Trump administration revoked that permission as part of a larger move to weaken efficiency rules for cars and trucks, even though several automakers opposed it. The EPA is now restoring that authority, so California and 13 other states can move ahead. Together, those states account for a third of the U.S. car market. Transportation is the country's largest source of greenhouse gas emissions. Lauren Sommer, NPR News.
The Nasdaq is up more than 3.5%. The Dow's up 2%. S&P also up 2.5%. You're listening to NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Kodiak's drive-in movie theater will be popping back up on the fairgrounds on Friday for the Kodiak Outdoor Film Festival. The event is organized annually by the Island Trails Network, which promotes outdoor stewardship on the island. And as KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, all submissions were filmed on the Kodiak Archipelago.
17 films will be screened at the festival. Philip Chersick is one of this year's dozen featured filmmakers in the festival. He has nearly 80 clips on Vimeo of his adventures scrambling, pack rafting, and camping across the island. He says they don't get a lot of clicks, but that's not really his motivation.
When you experience something, you know, firsthand, and you make a recording of it through the video, then you edit the video together, a couple years later, essentially, the video becomes your memory of the event.
Chersick also used to serve on Island Trails Network's board of directors. He still helps the organization catalog video memories from him and other filmmakers into about an hour and a half of content for the festival each year. He says Kodiak's backcountry isn't the only focus of the films. Commercial fishing and amateur footage from hikes off the island's road system are also part of the program. Anchorage-based filmmaker Max Romy's film, If You Give a Beach a Bottle, will also screen this year.
The first time I heard about marine debris was through a picture book. It was a story about a little piece of plastic that took to the seas, far from home.
It's about clearing marine debris from Kodiak's pristine coastline, and it's made the rounds at other film festivals. According to Chersick, there's one thing that ties them all together.
I'd say the overarching theme to the film festival could be boiled down to responsible use of the Kodiak outdoors. There was actually a time where someone submitted a video about surf kayaking on the Homer Spit, and just to really keep the movies locally focused, we declined to screen that one.
In the past, the Kodiak Outdoor Film Festival was held at the Harbor Convention Center in downtown. It was canceled because of the pandemic back in 2020. And this will be the second year films will be screened on a 40-foot jumbo screen donated by Highmark Marine at the fairgrounds. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
The value of investments in Russia held by the state of Alaska, including the permanent fund, have declined steeply since Russia invaded Ukraine, the state's top revenue official said yesterday. Revenue Commissioner Lucinda Mahoney says the value of state-held Russian stocks, bonds, and other investments have declined from $267 million at the end of last year to a current estimate of no more than $15 million. The Russian stock market has been closed since the invasion, but Mahoney says the state plans to sell its Russian assets when it can.
So we believe that the financial conditions in Russia have and will continue to deteriorate such that it makes it prudent to sell these securities and bonds.
Governor Mike Dunleavy and Mahoney said the Permanent Fund Corporation will have to make its own decisions about selling its Russian assets. The Russian investments were less than 0.3% of the state's assets before their value fell. Dunleavy repeated his call last week for a series of steps aimed at punishing Russia. He also continued to criticize the Biden administration for its handling of several proposed oil, gas, and mining projects.
Really, it's nothing short of an attempt to snuff out the life of Alaska as a state. And when we need these resources more now than ever, they're doubling down on this stuff. It makes no sense at all.
Both the governor and the revenue commissioner expressed frustration with banks that are not supporting drilling for oil and gas in the Arctic, but continue to invest in Russia. Dunleavy also called on the legislature to quickly pass permanent fund dividend payments to help Alaskans deal with inflation. He says he expects the state will announce next week that its projected revenues are now billions of dollars more than projected spending. President Biden announced a ban on Russian oil imports yesterday morning amid the country's continued attack on Ukraine. The ban had bipartisan support from legislators, including Alaska Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan. The ethos is to cripple Russia's economic power. Russia is one of the world's largest energy producers. KDLL's Sabine Pooks reports on what that ban might mean for Alaska.
The west coast of the U.S. gets between 300,000 and 7 million barrels of oil from Russia every month, according to data from the Energy Information Administration. not a lot of that supply heads to Alaska, though there is at least one facility in the state that's traditionally included Russian crude in its foreign imports, the Marathon Refinery in Kenai. That was until recently. Kara Moriarty, head of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, says the facility's not currently importing from Russia. It stopped shipping in crude from the country last year, though Moriarty says she's not exactly sure why.
I just know that at this time there are no Russian imports to Alaska that I'm aware of.
A spokesperson for Marathon Petroleum says the company doesn't comment on its crude sourcing, besides the fact that it processes, quote, mainly Alaska domestic crude along with limited international crude imports. Moriarty says refineries like the Kenai facility will make decisions about where they source imports based on demand and the type of crude they need. And she guesses those factors, not the current crisis in Ukraine, were to blame for the change.
Those circumstances change, you know, pretty fluidly. And so I don't have any, I don't know any rationale for recent, but I know that's been, you know, some of the rationale in the past.
Russian oil and gas have stayed immune from sanctions from the U.S. so far, though some large oil and gas companies have separately promised to stop importing oil and gas from the country. Moriarty says it's too soon to tell what a ban on Russian oil could mean for Alaska's own production.
Because no one knows for certain how long this conflict is going to last. No one knows the ramifications depending on how long it's going to last. Does this open up, you know, a market for us and for gas and North Slope gas? And, you know, again, it's just, I think it's just too soon to tell.
Marathon is the biggest U.S. importer of Russian crude, according to Energy News source Oil Price. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
After a large spike in COVID-19 cases earlier this year that strained hospital resources, Anchorage hospital officials are cautiously hoping that a return to a more normal condition is in sight. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has this report.
In late January, Alaska saw more than 14,000 cases of COVID-19 in 1 week, a record driven by the Omicron variant. Its high transmission rate was hitting hospital staff hard.
Throughout January and most of February, there facilities were dealing with a lot of staff out.
That's Jeannie Monk, Senior VP for the Alaska State Hospitals and Nursing Home Association. Monk says while Omicron sent a lot of people to the hospital, fewer of them needed ventilation and other intensive care than during the Delta spike.
But at the same time, the hospitals have been very busy because throughout Delta and this whole pandemic, many people have postponed care and now have gotten to the point where they needed the care that they had postponed was becoming more and more urgent.
COVID hospitalizations have dropped by more than half since the end of January. They're less than a quarter of what they were at last year's peak. Providence Chief Medical Officer Dr. Michael Bernstein says Omicron's impact on hospitals was not nearly as bad as Delta's for a couple of reasons. One is that more people are vaccinated, so even when they get infected, their symptoms are less severe. And Omicron itself is helping to lessen the strain on hospitals due, ironically, to its prolific spread and how it spreads.
Omicron just happens to be better at the mechanism that's more efficient in the nose and much less efficient at the one at affecting the lungs. So that combination really was kind of a gift to us because it meant it spread through huge amounts of the population, increasing the amount of people that are immune, but it didn't overwhelm us more than Delta.
Bernstein clarified that vaccination provides much more immunity than Omicron infection does. Dr. Robert Anders, administrator of the Alaska Native Medical Center, noted that most of the patients that the hospital saw during the Omicron surge were not vaccinated.
We still have a fairly large segment of the population that is unvaccinated, particularly in the urban areas.
While case counts and hospitalizations are lower, Monk with the Hospital Association says data may not tell the whole story.
We're not doing the level of testing we were, and people are relying on home tests. And so we can't rely on case counts anymore to really tell us what's going on.
All three healthcare officials say a new variant of COVID could renew the need to exercise more caution. For now, they recommend people stay up to date on vaccinations and wear masks in indoor public places. But they're hopeful that COVID will become more of an endemic illness like the flu, which does not overwhelm hospital capacity. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Yesterday was International Women's Day. The day has roots in the Soviet Union and is still really popular in several Eastern European countries, including Ukraine. Violeta Strait says the holiday is important to her family. She lives in Kenai, but is from the Donetsk region of Ukraine. She's been watching the Russian invasion there unfold from thousands of miles away. She says some people in Ukraine have mixed feelings about the holiday, which she calls Ladies' Day. But she told KDLL's Sabine Pooks it's still a chance to honor the women in her life and celebrate the beginning of spring.
So all the flowers, all the smiles and gifts and clean houses and departments were there for women to celebrate that day. It would start almost a week before and go full speed, not only for mothers, but for all women, beginning with baby girls and with older ladies all the way through. At school, they would have concerts for women. On TV, it would be almost the whole week of different concert programs and great movies and different shows with celebrities that would say congratulations. The cities and the villages everywhere would be decorated with tons of flowers, especially small yellow flowers that is called mimosa, would be like a symbol of that holiday. And all the ladies would dress up, be beautiful, and celebrate that holiday.
Did you celebrate it growing up, and do you celebrate it now that you're no longer in Ukraine?
I celebrated all my life, and it was... on a scale, it's like the biggest holiday. Maybe New Year would compare to it. It's much bigger than even Christmas in America, I can say, on the scale how it's celebrated emotionally. And when I came to America, I still celebrate it every year. And today my husband gave me roses, and he gave a rose to our younger daughter who is still with us in Kenai. So we do celebrate by just having special breakfast and trying to relax. Of course, right now it's hard to relax with the war situation and all the stuff has to be done. But anyway, we celebrate it because you cannot live life with no fun and happy moments.
I know your mom is still in Ukraine. Have you been able to reach out to her today and wish her a happy Ladies' Day?
I wrote a special poem for her on Skype last night because they're 11 hours ahead of us. And I said that it's hard to say happy Ladies' Day because it's not a happy time, but we definitely know what to wish you. So I wish you and your friends come together and crochet socks for people and slippers for people while you are laughing and singing. I wish you to be able to go to the market early in the morning and just relax and enjoy the walk and enjoy the sunshine. I wish you to be able to have some kind of moments when you have reasons to smile. She got connected with me through Skype for a few minutes, and she said that because of the shooting and disturbance in the area, they could not really celebrate much, but she and four other ladies got together and had a cup of tea with some sweets that they could bring together, and they still try to have some moments that when they can could enjoy their own company and also just a few minutes of sanity.
The next rocket launch from Kodiak's Pacific Spaceport complex could be as early as Sunday. California-based aerospace company Astra had planned to open its launch window yesterday through March 15th at the state-owned launch complex at Nair Cape. According to Alaska Aerospace's website, that's shifted to a three-day window between the 13th and the 15th. Astra completed its first successful rocket launch from Kodiak back in November. More recently, the publicly traded company's shareholders filed a lawsuit after a failed launch in Florida last month. If successful, the upcoming launch would be Astra's second rocket to reach orbit. The Kodiak Daily Mirror reports that the Alaska State Troopers responded to a large fire in Women's Bay on Friday. The fire was located on West Rezanov Drive, which is right next to the Rendezvous Bar and Grill. No one was injured in the fire, according to the Mirror. Officials say the fire was started by the property owner burning brush and was still smoldering on Monday morning. The rendezvous was not damaged in the incident.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
A battle at the front in the first third of the Iditarod. Three sled dog teams in the Iditarod Trail sled dog race are in and out of the ghost town of Ophir this morning, about 350 miles into the 1,000-mile race. Those are the teams of mushers Brent Sass of Eureka, currently in the lead, followed by five-time Iditarod champ Dallas Seavey of Talkeetna and Ryan Reddington of Knick. That is after Sass rested his team about 4 hours in the Ophir checkpoint as Seavey opted to stop farther down the trail. Since the start on Sunday, Iditarod teams passed from rolling foothills of the Alaska Range into some of the most challenging terrain of the trail on their way from Finger Lake to Roan and on to Nikolai, a village about a quarter of the way into the race. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan caught up with some mushers in the checkpoints of Roan and Nikolai to get their take on this year's trail.
Dallas Seavey blitzed into the Roan checkpoint, hardly more than a log cabin and a clearing in the woods at the confluence of the Susitna and Tatina rivers. Like other top teams, he described good trail conditions with plenty of snow.
But no, I mean, the gorge is beautiful, man. It was really nice.
As he tore through his supply bag searching for snacks and extra sled runners, he said his biggest challenge was his enthusiastic dogs.
They act like they haven't done anything all winter, so they're bombing down here at 100 miles an hour.
It's hard for mushers not to be impressed by Dalzell Gorge, which is one of the most dangerous sections of trails. It's marked by steep downhills and tight, twisty turns. After making the plunge with her team, Millie Porseld stopped for some rest in Roan and slurped down a vacuum-sealed bag of cold spaghetti.
It's such a privilege to go through there on this trail. I mean, through the pass and through that gorge, it's just unbelievable to me that there is a trail through there.
Teams farther back in the pack didn't get to see much of the trail. They raced down the gorge in darkness. On top of that, many of them got stuck in a storm that rolled in as they climbed Rainy Pass before the gorge. Rookie Bridget Watkins said visibility was bad.
There was no trail from the team that was in front of me, which hadn't been very long in front of me, but it was blowing sideways up there, so it was literally marker to marker there for a minute.
The pre-dawn darkness made running down Dalzell Gorge even more harrowing.
And it's just, you know, zip, zip, zoom, zag, bing, bang, boom, like a ping pong ball, you know, through there. You just got to drive, you know. I can see how people definitely will break sleds, which...
Near her sled, Eric Kelly had done just that. His brush bow, a rounded attachment in the front of his sled to keep his runners from getting hooked on trees, had snapped off in a collision. Rookie Gerhard Tihart of South Africa also had a misstep. After a rough ride on a descent that involved several strong bumps into trees, he turned a sharp corner to realize his lead dog was missing. Somehow its clip had broken in one of the collisions, allowing it to run ahead. Eventually, he found it at a stop. Another rookie, Matt Pavelio, says that while he avoided major mishaps in the gorge, he got glimpses of what could happen through his headlamp.
You know, you can see where people have been way off down into the ditches, and you cross, like, ice bridges, and there's, like, 10-foot drop-offs on either side into, you know, who knows, some abyss.
After crossing the South Fork of the Kuskokwim River, racers ran into hilly spruce terrain on a narrow trail. Before long, the spruce trees turned into skeletons, a result of a forest fire a decade ago that left the terrain exposed to wind. At the Athabascan village of Nikolai, the next checkpoint, teams arrived throughout the day on Tuesday. Many, like Hugh Neff, looked exhausted. He described those wind-blown mountains. He says pressing on the brake tore up the dust and clay that was on the ground.
All that clay comes up in the air, or dirt or whatever it is, and it goes, you know, in your eyes and your nostrils. You can barely see the trail. It's like you're in a coal mine or something.
At one point, Neff's sled tipped on its side, and he got drug along, stopping only when he yelled to the musher he was following to stop, which forced his team to stop as well. Things hardly got better for most teams. A long, monotonous run through the flatlands out of the mountains were beat down into moguls by snow machiners who'd passed through a few weeks ago. Neff said his 55-year-old arms were exhausted by the constant bumping.
I got a few Tylenol in the system right now.
Now Neff says he's ready for some smoother running as he heads towards McGrath. Reporting in Roan and Nikolai, I'm Lex Trinan.
We'll have more race coverage throughout the day at alaskapublic.org, including photos, more stories, and sled dog profiles. You can also sign up for our special Iditarod newsletter and find our Iditapod podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Casey Grove, and this is Iditarod coverage on Alaska Public Media.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
It's your last chance to catch Disney's beloved musical, The Little Mermaid, which continues on the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium stage with three performances March 11th through the 13th. The Little Mermaid has captivated audiences for generations, and now, the enchanting story, unforgettable songs, larger-than-life characters, and breathtaking special effects will come alive on the Kodiak stage with a cast of more than 50 local actors, singers, and dancers. Don't miss your chance to go under the sea and discover a whole new world. Tickets are on sale now. Visit kodiakarts.org for more information and to get yours today.
And showtimes are Friday at 7 p.m., Saturday at 7 p.m., and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Go to the Kodiak Arts Council website to get your tickets.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the ninth day of March, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 7:41. It will set again at 6:59. That will give us 11 hours and 19 minutes of daylight, a gain of 5 minutes compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 50 degrees. That was set in 1955. Our record low was 1 degree, set in 1971. Chilly, chilly 1971. Currently 42 degrees out at the airport. They have a light rain fog mist. I'd say we have a medium rain fog mist up here on Burrow Hill. They're calling for rain through tomorrow about noon, then showers after that, turning to a chance of rain. For today, we're looking for northeast winds to 10, turning to the southeast tonight, and continuing tomorrow up to 15, gusting to 20 tomorrow from the southeast. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on Kodiak's east side in just a few minutes at 12:31 p.m. That will be a 1.6-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 6:49 this evening of 5.1 feet, Our low tide for tomorrow morning will be at 11:48. Strike that, our low tide for late tonight will be at 11:48 p.m. That'll be a 3.5-foot tide. And our high tide for tomorrow morning will be at 6:22 a.m. and be 7.5 feet here on the east side. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 12:52 this afternoon. That will be a 2.5-foot tide in Larson Bay. Your next high tide will be at 7:03 p.m. of 9-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 12:17 a.m. of 5.3 foot, and your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 6:49 a.m. and be 11.9 feet. Mariners, we do have a small craft advisory through Thursday for Marmot Island to Sitkanak. East 25 today and seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, southeast 20, seas to 11 feet. In the Shelikof Strait, a gale warning through tonight. Northeast 40, seas to 14 feet today. For tomorrow, east 25 and seas to 8 feet in the Shelikof. Well, the Kodiak City Council will be holding its regular meeting tomorrow. That's happening at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library. Participation is both in-person and virtual. Go to the City of Kodiak website for packets and to stream the event live. And call the clerk for more information at 486-8636. Also, the Assembly will be having a work session tomorrow night. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly chambers.
Mm.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.